Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three in the fans score one. Score! Off the floor! On the floor! Paul Kariya!
All right, we are back with a post-game show, and don't we pick the right games?
Perfect. Yeah, dude, we have wonderful perfect timing. Choice. There's no way that this was stupid of us
to do. There's no way we thought a back-to-back against the Oilers after they've rattled off three straight wins with a new head coach would be a bad game to cover. Not at all.
No shit. Let's just start here real quick. Before, you know, we do whatever the hell else we're going to do. I've been a very, like, vocal defender of Dallas Eakins. And there have been games every so often where I'm like, oh, yeah, he really does look like he's gotten better, but he's not really good yet. Or, you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't really gotten to that level. But it's like, all right, fine, I like what he's doing. But, like, I think tonight it's pretty stark to watch your coach get out-coached by a guy who's had the job for a week. Yeah. Like, these aren't even assistants down there. Those guys came up from Bakersfield. Like, if it was assistant coaches, that would bother me a lot less than two new guys. And I understand that, you know, some of them have, you know, like a pre-existing relationship, right? Like, Dave Manson was someone I know people were excited for, like Evan Bouchard for, because they already worked together in Bakersfield. Yeah. And then like Yamamoto and Pooja Jarvi. Like I get that there's a little bit there, but it's not the same. Like I don't think Draisaitl and McDavid ever played for them. You know what I mean? Like I just it hurts. It hurts.
Like
it's
tough for sure. Like there are moments he got outcoached in that game. But again, like you're taking over a team that has the two top scorers in the league. That just added a player like Evander Kane. So, I mean, I think there is a well, I forget what the stat was. It the most five-goal games this year or something like that? It was the Oilers are now tied with the Panthers for the most five-goal games. So this team never had a problem scoring. It was just they can't keep the puck under their back of the net and play defense. So they have games like this, and they're capable of doing this. So before I start giving, what is it, Jay Woodcroft is the new coach for the Oilers? Credit.
Yeah. Jay Woodcroft.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I'd love to give them credit. I hope they could turn it around because they'll be trying to do something nobody's been able to do. What is it, five or six head coaches now for McDavid? So,
yeah. Well, here's the other thing, though, about that. Like, I get what you're saying, that the weapons are there, but, like, the defense looks better. Like, they're noticeably improved defending just entries into their own zone and stuff. Like, there were still times where, like, you still have Tyson Barrie out there, or it's still Cody Ceci, or right, or even Darnell Nurse, who, you know, I don't think is bad defensively per se, but like he's definitely had like moment like where he hasn't looked super great in the past. And so I think he just looks a little bit better. You know, they all like that's the part of it for me is like they just look a little bit more sound in their own end. And that's always what the coach was going to need to be able to do. Like, you know, especially now with, like you said, adding Kane. So now, you know, I mean, their third line can reasonably have Hyman and Nugent Hopkins on it. That's huge. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then you've got guys like Pulju Jarvi and Yamamoto who can slide up the roster or the lineup.
Pretty good game today, too.
Exactly. You know, and I just I don't know, man. It's, I guess what I'm saying is just like I feel like they had a bigger impact on this game than Dallas Aikens did, and that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, especially the spot.
Given that it's their fourth game.
No, for sure. When you're still trying to figure out a team, you know, some of these guys, but not everybody, and you're just imposing presumably a new system. And but if you're Edmonton right now, like, this is a team you want to face. If you want to face Anaheim the way they're playing right now and you know the struggles that they're having, to go off and rattle off four straight wins and play a team on the second game of a back-to-back, a tough loss last night against the Flames, where it was 6-2 in that game too, so it was not a great Western Canada road trip for Anaheim. And we talked about this on a few podcasts during the break when the Ducks didn't have any games, that, you know, first game back against Seattle, that should be a must win that they lost. Game where you need to pick up points. It's a 4-point game in the sense. It's not one where, you know, a playoff battle, right, where Seattle's not going to really challenge you for a playoff spot. But it was these two games that you earmarked and said, okay, if they lose these two games, those are 4-point games. Now, all of a sudden, you're buried further down in the standings because the Oilers have won 4 in a row and the Flames have rattled off some success over their last 10 games. And all of a sudden that, you know, seven games in hand that the Flames and Oilers had, those have caught back up now, and the Ducks are sitting fifth in the Pacific Division and slowly getting out of the race. Like, they're going to be left in the dust here. And we talked about how big of a month February is going to be, and you still have Vancouver and a few other teams to face before the end of February here. But these were the games. If you had to kind of stay in the playoff hunt here, those are the ones that you wanted to win.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, like, with Edmonton and Calgary having those games in hand, you especially need to control the games that you can control. You can't, you know, play those other seven games and make sure they lose, but, like, you can play the head-to-head matchup and win. Like, you need to pick up those points. Like you said, they're all 4-point games, and when they have those games in hands and they're playing well, you know, they're going to get wins against other teams. You know, the bottom of the Pacific is still the bottom of the Pacific. Like, you know, so I just think like you said, it's a really bad look. And it just feels like tonight of all night, like, I guess the thing, like, I caught myself kind of looking back to, like, the irony of this being the Western Canada thing of, like, bad stretch, coach gets let go in February version of, like, Carlisle on the Eastern Canada road trip, you know, and I just,
well, think all the positives just go out the window, right? Where you,
feels yeah, eerie.
It,
like, it just, they feel similar, like, in mood, like, where you're like, oh, this isn't seem like it's getting better.
If we,
like, obviously this season is much better than that season was. But yeah,
I would agree, and it does have that feel. The only saving grace that Dallas Aikens have is, one, they just have a new GM in Pat Verbeek, and that's the last thing that's on his mind. And two, his contract's up at the end of the season, so it's a move right now that they could just, they don't really have to make, and the candidates that are available, there's going to be a lot more to choose from at the end of the season, presumably, right? So, but it does have that feel, right? Like, this is a pivotal season-defining stretch. Season-defining two-game road trip, if you want to call it that, for the Ducks, where, you know, they're not in the playoffs by winning these two games, but you put yourself in a better position, right? You're at 59 points.
Right. You're staying in the
fight. If you win both of these games, you're second in the Pacific Division right now. You're still 4 points up on the Oilers. You're 1 point behind the Flames. You're up on tied with Vegas. Obviously, those teams still have games in hand, but you're in the fight. And now, all of a sudden, you're 7 points behind Calgary, and they have 4 games in hand. You're 4 points behind Vegas. Vegas has two games in hand. You're 2 points now behind the Oilers, who have three games in hand. And all of a sudden, it's really falling out of place. And even the Kings are sitting in fourth right now, tied on points, but they have three games in hand, right? And now right. You're starting to look at, okay, now we're in the draft lottery, and we're back to where we kind of expected we'd be at the beginning of the year. But now that's what we're going to be talking about. Which, listen, like, this is kind of where you ultimately expected them to end up. The fact that you had such a great start and you were in the playoff hunt for a while, for almost half the season, that's exciting in its own right, and that's development, and it's progress for them that they have been better than last year in some areas and have had more exciting play throughout the year. And obviously the progression of Zegras and Terry and Drysdale to some extent as well, like that's a positive for sure. But now we're starting to get to kind of drawn back to earth here of what we expected for this team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, like you said, like they're coming down. Like I still think there are plenty of positives to take from this season, right? I don't want to be complete downers about it. Like there's a lot to like here, but these two games, I think, especially stand out because, again, they were after the break. Like we talked about with the schedule, this is going to be their chance to stay in the fight for the playoff hunt. But also, like, you know, the trade deadline is coming up. We've just had these couple of articles or these couple appearances or things about, like, Pat Verbeek and, like, what he's going to be doing. And it's just, like, you watch the way they play and it's, like, what is the incentive for him to keep those guys? What is those incentive for those guys to want to stay, right? Like, because that's the way you're keeping them, is you get that contract, that contract extension with them. That's the only way these guys are staying here. You're not going to keep them and let them walk in free agency. So if there isn't anything like on the ice right now to show them that it's worth hanging around, they're not going to sign it. And at that point, you can't lose them for nothing. And the team isn't competitive in that way, right? Like it never really was, but it, you know, look, like, you know, we all had the fan. I will speak for myself instead of using the royal we, but like, I was, you know, a little high on my own supply or whatever it was, as far as like, you know, the dreams of like a Giroux or a Pavelski or some of these rental players, you know, and it clearly was unsustainable hot streaks and a power play clicking at a high level. But like, we've seen some of this stuff come down to earth, and it's just as the season drags on, these things are more likely to level out. You're more likely to find yourself at that kind of active medium or median, I guess, of like what play is for you. You know, they've kind of settled into exactly what we expect them to be. Like you said, like it really feels like the hot streak at the beginning, the what, 8-game win streak?
Yeah.
Like basically that is the only reason that they're even kind of in the conversation right now, because at that point, beyond that, they're a sub 500 team from wins and losses. So
and you know what, it's almost better it happened now, right? And you would want the downturn to kind of happen where it is now. Like this is the perfect spot for you to kind of figure out exactly where this team is. You're a month out from the deadline. You've got a new GM in who can start to assess and really make a decision from what we've seen. You know, Lindholm, we'll get into this a little bit more, but Lindholm is set to test the free agent market, so that likely kind of writes the script for him to be on the way out, especially with the Ducks' struggles. Rickard Rakell looks to be on his way out. Manson still potentially could, but I guess he'd prefer to stay is what the report is, but can still see him heading out the door. And, you know, you'd rather it now than, you know, after the deadline, you've gone out and you've maybe you haven't swung for the fences and added a Drew or Pavelski, but you've gone out and added, or you haven't sold those players, and then the downturn happens and all of a sudden you miss the playoffs, right? And you haven't sold those guys. So they've left it almost as late as you could possibly want it to for this downturn to happen. But it is good timing in the sense, okay, now we know what this team is. Yes, they have been better this year and there was a great start to the year, but we're starting to kind of come back down to earth, like I said here, and now you can, you know, make the smart decisions, the right decisions to hopefully, you know, accelerate this, rebuild, retool, get some young assets in and, you know, prepare to be better next year and the year after that.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I don't know really a ton of what else there is to get into it, so we might as well just kind of talk about it since we're already here. Like, Do you think there is any incentive beyond waiting for a better offer to not moving guys sooner than later?
Yeah, I think some teams are still waiting for that first domino to fall. Like, I know Toffoli was the first piece to get traded, but he's not as comparable to, like, the rental market hasn't been set yet, right? Because Toffoli had, I think, 2 years left after this. So that is, it still sets the price on a forward of his capabilities. But it's, again, it's not a rental. And it's the, you know, the defenseman market hasn't been set. So when we see, like, a Ben Chiarot get dealt, who's a rental defenseman, and he goes for a first and a third or whatever he ends up going for, that could give you what the Ducks should expect to get for Josh Manson. And, you know, if when a rental forward gets moved, that could tell you the price for Rickard Rakell. But the problem then with waiting is, okay, now one team that was interested has now given up that first for Chiarot. And this other team has now given up their first for whoever, whatever forward is available. Okay, that set the price for Rakell and Manson, but now there's one less suitor out there. So that price only stays that high as long as there's other teams bidding. When you get down to that last team that's out there, you got to accept whatever they're giving you at that point, right? And the leverage kind of goes out the window. So there is this waiting game you got to kind of test here. Is, do you want to be the first team to set the price? And you know, if you get the offer you're looking for, you just take it? Or do you wait for another team to set that price for you, but then at risk of, you know, taking one more suitor out of the game and one more team that would be interested in these guys out of the mix?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it kind of feels like it comes down to, like, you knowing what your minimum return is and having to stick to that for as long as you can, right? Because until the trade deadline day, like, you have time. So you can hold out and just wait. And then they're like, all right, well, we're going to take then that second pick is going to be a fourth instead of a third. And we'll take this prospect instead of that one. And then with the first, I'm fine. You know what I mean? Like, but, like, I also do think there's something to be said for going out and being the ones to set the market and being like, look, we'll trade you this guy right now. But, you know, if you don't want to pay this much, you can go get Ben Chiarot. But he's not as good. He's not going to do the things for you that Hampus Lindholm is going to do. You know, Hampus Lindholm isn't small. Again, he's like 6'3", like 210, 215, something like that. Like, he's not a small guy. You know, he doesn't play overly physical. But he uses his body really well. So he's not somebody that, like, you're worried about there getting pushed around or anything like that. Like, there's, you know what I mean? And, like, Rickard Rakell, I think that one for me is a little less of a concern because I imagine that'll be the easiest player to trade. He doesn't have any trade protection. They can retain half of his salary and keep him under $2 million in cap hit. And he's a top six winger. Like, he just is what he is. Like, he should be either a first round pick or a top prospect. And, you know, then you got to balance it out from there. Like, is it a second round pick, like the Toffoli to Montreal trade, right? Or is it something else? So, you know, I just think with Lindholm, I think is the one for me that I would be looking to get a little aggressive on and kind of courting those trade offers, because I think he's the one that you have the best chance of setting a high market with.
Yeah, I would say so.
Instead of somebody lowballing.
Yeah, I would say when you look at the rental market for defensemen, Lindholm is either number one or number two, you know, with John Klingberg being the other guy who's probably near the top of that list. I don't include Chychrun as a rental, obviously, because he's got a couple more years left, and I feel like that deal is it's beside any of these other deals. Like, it's not going to affect what Chiarot's price is going to be and what Lindholm's price is going to be. Like, that Chychrun deal could happen or it could not. Like, the Coyotes don't have to do that, and it's really separate of any other deals that are going to go on. But yeah, the Ducks could easily go into the market and get something really good for Lindholm, which they should. If the rumored price on guys like Chiarot is a first and a third, like, you need to get close to double that for a player like Lindholm, even with him being an unrestricted free agent. Like, he should be the most sought after defenseman, in my opinion, even with Klingberg out of there. If you're a team that is looking to add, you know, a really good top four two-way defenseman, he would be at the top of everybody's list, I would imagine. Especially the teams that got priced out of Jacob Chychrun and can't bring him in. And we've talked about them before, teams like Florida and teams like New York and Boston that could really use a player like Hampus Lindholm. And also, again, yeah, he's going to test free agency, but there is something to be said about, okay, now we get this guy for a playoff run, and we're going to be the first ones to kind of talk a contract extension with him. And of all these players, when you look at, you know, which guy would a team want to keep around beyond this year, again, he's probably near the top of that list, if not the top of that list of guys that you'd want to keep around and sign to a long-term deal. And there's something to be said about being the first ones to kind of pitch him on something and give him an offer he can't refuse and get that locked up before July 1st. So I think it's going to be the toughest one to get done because it's going to cost a lot for a team to acquire him. And you're going to have a pretty high minimum that you're willing to accept to move him out the door. But at the end of the day, like, if he is set, like they say, on testing free agency, you do have to trade him. And you eventually kind of have to take whatever the best offer is, which I still imagine is going to be fairly high because there's going to be a lot of teams that are interested in Hampus Lindholm.
So let me ask you this. Is there any team you wouldn't trade Lindholm to?
I don't think so.
With the understanding that he could re-sign there, that being the underlying thing, right? It's like, what happens if he re-signs there?
Like, I think there's some teams you could look at and say, you know, you would rather him not go there. You know, again, Pacific Division teams, Calgary, Edmonton. But when we're looking at timelines of when the Ducks are going to be competitive again versus Lindholm's effectiveness in 3, 4, 5 years, I think if the best offer comes from a team, even if it's Calgary or Edmonton, and it's significantly better than whatever your second best offer is, then you take it, right? Because as Dalton said in here, like, he could re-sign anywhere anyways. It doesn't mean he's going to go to Calgary and he's going to re-sign there. Same with Edmonton. You've got, you've always got that chance, like I said, that they get that first right to kind of talk to him and offer him a contract. But it doesn't mean he's going to go there. And All things seem to point to him just going into July 1st and just seeing what offer he's going to get from every other team. Like, I don't think he's going to settle even if it is with a team that is competitive. I think he's going to go into July 1st. He's not going to sign anywhere, and he's going to just get the 4 or 5 best offers that come in and decide where he wants to go. You know, there's something to be said about players being able to do that for the first time in their career and having kind of the freedom to choose where they want to go, and he seems to be set on doing so. And before, you know, I want to answer a question quickly too from Firebites in the chat. He said, should we be going for picks or top prospects for Lindholm? I would probably lean closer to the second, to the latter there, in top prospects. Players a little bit closer to being NHL ready. But if you're getting another first, I think that that has to be in. I think it's a mix of both. Like, you got to get a first round pick for him and then some prospects with it. Unless that top prospect who's coming back is a Capo Caco or something like that. Now, that's an extreme, but those are some of the guys we've talked about before. Unless you're getting like a real high-end top prospect that you can kind of forego that first for.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know.
Sorry, I kind of took us off the rails there.
No. I'm just thinking about it because it's one of those things where it's like, you know, this is one of those things where, like, this is kind of how that you hope the GM is, like, able to, like, you always hope somebody undervalues one of their own players and you can sneak them out, right? And I think that's always, like, the thing for me is, like, do you want to do that or do you want to take, you know, one of the more clear-cut prospects? Because if there is, like, a diamond in the rough, like, there's probably a reason for whatever that is. But you're also just, you're going to end up pushing on price and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I'm a little inarticulate right now and I apologize, but I think prospects are definitely better to increasing the efficacy, but I think they're still in a window where having a second pick and maybe being able to trade up into, in the draft, I think it is not, is not a bad idea. I think they're still close enough in that window, right? Because we figure Zellweger's probably 2 years away still. McTavish is, you know, he'll probably be on the team next year, but I think it would be more than fair to expect that he's not going to walk in as an impact player just because it's hard to do. You know, so having another pick, and then maybe, you know, when those guys are on the second or third year of their next contract, now you've got a couple of kids that you took in this draft coming in on their ELCs and things like that. So I think there are legitimate merits to both. I think ultimately you have to look at who you're trading with and where you think that pick is going to fall. Because if that pick is between 26 and 32, then I think maybe, yeah, you go, I'd rather have the prospect. Now, Anaheim has had a lot of luck, you know, with Perreault and Tracy picking in that exact range. But, you know, I think it's easier to walk away from that pick.
Yeah, maybe don't target the division winners where you're getting like a bottom four pick for sure. Exactly. Right? So.
But, you know, if you know it's going to be in that 17, 18, 19 range, like, yeah, just outside of the lottery, like, hell yeah. You know, like, that's like the Kings are kind of interesting in that way, right? Because, like, they're going to be in the mix, but if they make it, it's going to be as a wild card team, which means that pick is going to be lower down. And, like, that's always something I've found is really interesting is, like, the fact that GMs who are, like, sellers should target the wild card teams because they're in a position to give you the best pick, but they're also in a position to where they need that help the most. Because if you're a wild card team, we fucking already did it. You can talk yourselves into, oh, we got to go get this guy, and this is going to put us over the edge, and, you know, whatever. We can win from the eighth seed or whatever you want to say. So, you know, I think watching those teams, like you said, like a Boston, I think Boston's kind of around the wild card. Pittsburgh is around the wild card. Like,
and Boston's just there basically because the how good the other teams in the division are. When you like Toronto and Florida and Tampa are all near the top of that division. Boston, I think, is in fourth, but they're 28-17-2 or something. So, you know, you can target them. They'll likely be a lower pick despite their record just because of that division in front of them.
Yeah. Here's a question I have for you. How do you feel at this point, right, given that we're kind of looking at this next 3 or 4 year window, how do you feel about taking on salary with term at this point to, you know, kind of doing a David Backes trade, right, where you're like, we'll take that extra year and that extra cap hit and we'll get a little bit more for it? Like, do you think that's still worth it, or would you rather have the flexibility that comes with that cap space?
Yeah, I think it depends on the contract, right? Like, we've joked about Jeff Skinner before, obviously, he started picking it up for the Sabres. But I'm, you know, I wouldn't want a big contract like that for 5, 6, 7 years. But I think if you're looking on, you know, shipping
Jason Greenback,
something that's 2-3 years, and you know, you can get it off the books pretty quickly, and you have still the chance to maybe flip this guy as an unrestricted free agent, a pending one, and eat half the salary and move him out if he does well with your team. Like, I'm okay with those deals. If you're getting assets for taking this guy and potentially get assets again down the road for flipping this guy, or he becomes a valuable member of your team, I think on the right deal, the Ducks should definitely be looking at something like that, as well as moving, you know, again, we talked about moving Kessler's contract. If somebody is willing to give you something for that, they should be exploring all avenues of bringing in assets. And we've heard from the previous GM that is something they wanted to do this year. And I don't think that changes with Pat Verbeek. If the right offer comes through that, you know, a team says, hey, you want to take this contract from us? We'll give you a second round pick, or we'll give you this prospect. And it makes sense for the Ducks. I think they'll do it. And especially if you have bodies going out the door, right? If you have a Raquel or a Lindholm and Manson, or all three of them going out the door, and you can bring in a guy who still an NHL player. Yeah, his contract sucks, but you just eat that salary hit for the Ducks to probably have to get back to the floor with all these guys moving out potentially, and you get more assets for it. Why not, right? You need players. You need guys who are going to play despite them, like a lot of people are saying, they're in full tank mode. And you get if you can get some extra assets for it, then yeah, I'm all for deals like that. But avoid maybe the 4 to 5, 6 year contracts with some significant term on it, where that could come back to hurt you down the road.
Yeah, I think the one that feels like it might happen is taking back Marco Scandella if that St. Louis trade happens, because I think they could easily talk themselves into giving up premium assets if they could get that Scandella contract off the books and bring in a player like Lindholm to replace him. So I just, you know, and that's 2 more years at 3.275. You know, like, again, what do you call it? Philly's not buyers, but that kind of James Van Riemsdyk contract where there's another year left at $7 million. So it's like short pain, but high cap hit. And you're like, all right, fine.
Yeah. And if the Flyers are really trying to tear it down, right? If Drew's on his way out and they want to just get as much cap off the books as they can now and just start fresh while they've still got some of their young players like Konechny and Farabee and Hart in the organization and just get as many guys off the books as possible, then yeah, you could look at that. But, and there's a lot of teams that will be interested in Lindholm. And the good thing is there's a few of them that have some really deep prospect pools. You know, when you look at New York and Florida and Carolina as teams that could be interested, you know, St. Louis and Boston, I think, are great fits for Lindholm. I'm not sure the prospect that you're going to get back is necessarily better or as highly regarded as some of the guys you could get from the other teams. But I mean, the more suitors you get, the higher you can drive the price up potentially, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's about creating a bidding war. And that's, you know, I mean, we talked about it earlier. You said it perfectly. That's the risk-reward factor you run with trying to walk it out towards the deadline and to make sure that you are getting that return, but that you're not shooting yourself in the foot, now forcing yourself to take a lesser package simply because you were stubborn, right? Which is kind of what we all were afraid Bob Murray was doing. You know, I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you is, since we're kind of talking about like trades and stuff like that, like Tiefer just had that article about Sam Steele and Max Comtois might be kind of lost in a numbers game a little bit. You know, Max Comtois had missed a run of games there, and then Sam Steele was getting left out of the lineup and only came back in because Getzy's health hurt. Like, do you think Anaheim should be taking calls on everyone? Or like, and I guess this is a little bit more for Comtois, because I think at this point with Steele, like if somebody calls and was like, we'll give you a second, you're like, okay, great. But like with Comtois, like he's got, I think, another year, if not two, left on that deal. It's super low cap at like just over $2 million. And, you know, he's a player that I think teams have seen be tangibly impactful. And I wonder if, you know, a team that's looking to keep costs down would be interested in a player like that.
I think I would only move Comtois if it's a make way for a bigger deal, you know, a Chychrun or something like that, where they're saying, okay, Comtois has to be in this deal to make it happen, and then the rest of the deal makes sense. I think that's the only way it would make sense for me to pull the trigger on that deal. Like, I don't think you're moving Comtois out for another struggling player, if you want to call it that, or picks or anything at this point. I think there's some clear evidence for why Comtois is struggling this year. You know, he's not been given necessarily the same opportunities. He's being healthy scratched for Delorier and Grant to play. And he's got an abysmally low shooting percentage, like 4% right now, when he was shooting like 17% last season. And when you go look at the underlying numbers, there's been a real focus on the defensive side of the game for him. He's picked up his defensive play. And as we've seen it for development of players in the past, like, that can be at the detriment of your offense for a couple seasons when you're starting to iron out that side of your game. You've got him at 2 years at a really great cap hit. I think he's a guy from, we've seen what he can do when we look at what his production was last year. He's one of the guys that I think you got to kind of hold on to, unless, like I said, he's a make way in a significant deal for a player, you know, great young player like Chychrun or something like that.
So I guess let me ask it this way. Would you do Comtois for DeBrusk?
I don't think so. No.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, ultimately, Comtois' production, when you look at it like a point per game rate last year, was what Boston gets in a really good year from Jake DeBrusk. And
which is what Anaheim got in a really good year from
exactly.
him.
But I think there's potential for some more upside there. Now, I'm all for acquiring Jake DeBrusk. I just don't think like a straight swap yet for a player like Comtois is worth it for me. I think at worst a lateral move, right? Is if Comtois becomes DeBrusk. But I think there's something to be said about developing your own prospects and waiting and giving them time to see what they can become. Like Comtois is, what, 22 at this point? So, you know, last year was his real kind of first breakthrough full season in the NHL. So you're going to expect struggles at some point. And And like I said, there are some identifiable numbers and factors you can look at for why he's struggling this year and point to that and say, listen, it's just kind of an unlucky year when it comes to finishing. And he's kind of been bounced around a few different lines and healthy scratched and hasn't and then injured and coming back from that. So I think it's premature to say, okay, let's move him now. Like, let's give him a full runway, healthy setup to begin the season next year. Get him on a line that he's comfortable with, and let's see what he can do then. And if we're sitting here at the same time next year and these struggles are still here, I think then I'm a bit more comfortable saying, okay, maybe now we look at moving him out for another struggling player, Philip Zadina or something like that.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's just been something that I've just been kind of, looking at and wondering about, especially with the cap space right now being so tight for everyone. There's really only like two-ish like legit contenders that have more than, $1.5 million in cap space, if that. And so I was just, he'd be cost controlled. He has one more year. He just turned 23 at the beginning of January. He makes $203.7 million. He's going to be an RFA at the end of this deal. So there's still all that security and team control. And I just was thinking like, I wonder if that is something that, with him being out of the lineup a little bit up and down this year, if he is a player teams would call
him. Oh, I definitely think
because
they will.
He does provide. Yeah. And so like, what would you, would you be open to moving him? That kind of a thing. Like, it was just, I guess, like a thought exercise. Cause like the reality of it is with all the prospects that are coming up, you can't keep everybody. So some of these guys are going to get moved or lost in the shuffle just by nature. That's just the way the numbers work, yeah. Right?
I think if you get an offer that's too good to refuse, then at that point, you've as a GM, you've got your price set on what you would be willing to move this guy for. And you've probably set it a bit higher, like aiming not for how he's playing this year, but for as if we traded him at his peak, this is what we would have let him go for. And if you get that, then you might have to take it at that point. Because, yeah, there will be a lot of teams, like you said, that are tight against the cap that they can't go for, the Giroux and the JT Millers and the top guys that are going to be available. And that will be when, okay, maybe they're calling to discuss Raquel and then the discussion shifts to a Comtois or something like that. Or a team directly calls about Maxime Comtois. They want to see if he's available and their offer just kind of blows you out of the water and you kind of have to take it. And along those same lines, I think that's what's going to make Ricardo Raquel so valuable at this deadline and why the Ducks will ultimately get a decent return for him is because of his cap hit. When you come to the deadline, it's going to be almost nothing. And if you think, okay, maybe the Ducks eat even $1 million or $2 million off of that, or I guess they can't eat two because that's more than 50%, but $1 million to $1.5 million off that deal, it's next to nothing. Like any team can fit him under at 40 to 50% retained at the deadline, and that's extreme value for the Ducks when you think, now they can start going to these teams that can't go after the Drews and really just hang them out to dry and say, like, you can't go out and get anybody else. Like, this is the best guy you're gonna get, and he's gonna cost you absolutely nothing. This is what we want, and they can start. Yeah. They have ultimate leverage, I think, in that sense, what it looks like with a player like Raquel, because they can go to some of these teams that can't afford to go after the big names.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think, it would be right about 185.
Yeah.
Like, every team could find a salary to move out to make room for that. I think between him not having any trade protection and his cap hit being minuscule, I think he'll definitely be the easiest for them to move. And the question will just be, does that make him the most likely to last until deadline day?
Yeah.
Just because there is something to be said for, like, I know that when the time comes, I'm going to have an offer that I'll take. So we're going to hold out and kind of do our research and yada, yada, yada. Whereas, maybe with Lindholm, if somebody comes up and they give you something close to perfect, you really think hard about it because you don't, want to give them more time to go and solve that problem, right?
Yeah.
So it's just interesting, I guess. I think at this point, with the way the season's kind of turned a little bit, I think, and having Verbeek come in and knowing that we're getting fresh eyes, I think a lot of people have kind of turned their eyes to the deadline and what this team is going to look like after it. And what kind of you know, kind of a statement, I guess, that that will be from Verbeek about what he sees happening here. You know, because I think there aren't a lot of guys that play, like on this team right now, there aren't a lot of guys that play as physically as Comtois with his upside, right? And so I could see a team like Anaheim or a player like Pat Verbeek who, you know, appreciates both parts of that, being someone who would be like, you know, I'm going to hold on to this guy. I don't think I want to take calls. And like, obviously, if somebody godfathers you, they godfather you. But more often than not, you're like, nah, he's not really anybody I'm interested in. Or because you've got all these prospects, is he somebody that you start to put out there? And I just, like I said, I think you can go either way on it. I think it's ultimately a like an aesthetic choice almost. But I just think it's going to be very interesting to see where this team is, because what Verbeek does at the deadline is going to be the best impression we're going to get of what he actually thinks with this team, because there's not going to be the ability, right, to choose your words carefully. It's just like, these are the guys that left, and this is what we got back. And that's just definitive, right? So I don't know. I just think it's going to be a really interesting about a month for the next
I think this is the first time I've probably changed my stance on this. Is I think Hampus Lindholm could potentially be the first one moved of the three, just because you know you've got a fair amount of suitors who can want to afford him and have the need and the real drive to go out and get a player like him. It's going to be like four or five teams, maybe three or four, who are really heavily invested into getting him. The same teams that are probably in on Chychrun and feel like now they can't get him and have the assets to get it done. And I think he could go first. I think Raquel and him are going to get moved. I think Manson, with the reports that he would like to stay, and I think there's always been, you know, a love, not to say that the Ducks haven't loved Lindholm and Raquel, but there's always been this sense with Manson that he could re-sign at some point, like especially when Murray was here, that there was no chance he was going to leave. I think that softened a little bit. But again, he's the hardest one to move as well, because he has that no trade list that he can submit, whereas Raquel and Lindholm, you can float out to anybody. So I think there's a lot of kind of hoops you have to jump through to move Manson and find the right partner for him at this point to move him out. But I could see Lindholm and Raquel being moved before the deadline. And the most interesting part of all of this is, like, is there a team that could come in and get both? Like, you know, Carolina or New York, who could just have the cap space and have the need for both of these guys. And like we said, Raquel, you don't have to really retain anything on Lindholm. The Ducks have the ability to bring on a bad contract, retain some on Raquel if they want to make it non-existent, and just up the asking price to a point where, like, yeah, okay, it makes sense to put both these guys together, because what you could get for them individually isn't going to be as good.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports, and support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. Well, let's ask it the question this way.
We have the same agent now too.
like, okay, let's say you take Patrick Nemeth, makes 2.5, and Philip Chytil makes 2.3. So that's, you know, 4.8, almost 5 million. That would be close to what, 50% on both of them. Like, from what are you asking for in that case? If you're sending those out, taking money back, like, is it Schneider and Lafreniere and a first. Like
I think that might be too much. I think Schneider a first, and then you know a B level prospect, and then maybe another pick on top of that, like a third from 2023. I think that's what you're potentially looking at as kind of a starting point. I think you have to remember, like, if you're including Hedel in this as well, that's an asset in itself, like a 22-year-old former first-round pick, like, that goes into it. But, like, I think you're looking at one of their top prospects, and if the Ducks are, I don't want to say if the Ducks are smart, but they should be looking at right-handed defenseman, a guy like Schneider, a guy like Lundqvist, who've played with the Rangers this year, and one of them could easily make way with Lindholm coming in. You can't play both of them in the lineup at this point. So I think that would kind of be a starting point for them to look at. Yeah, you can bring in, you know, a Nemeth that comes back just for a salary swap. And then, yeah, the first round pick. So, it depends on what offers you get. But I think there is some potential for them to get traded both at the same time to the same team, and one team just kills two birds with one stone, goes out and gets their top nine forward and their top four defensemen from one team, and it's just a quick and easy transaction. I think it's increasingly more likely. I know it's, I don't know, I don't say it's cliche, I know it's kind of a cop-out, so yeah, they both have the same agent, so it makes negotiations easier, but it's
really close.
Yeah, they're for sure. Really, like, they, I'm sure they would love to go to the same team. And again, I'll keep harping on this point. Like, again, you're dealing with the same guy here to move both of these guys out. It's a very easy negotiation in that sense to get them both to the same team. And, you know, we look at Calgary, just they already have Toffoli. Now they're going out and getting a defenseman. A lot of teams are all going to have the same needs, a depth forward and a defenseman that they want to add. There's a handful of them all out there that are going to be willing to go out and add the same. And when you think Rickard Rakell is probably the best bang for your buck in terms of what you can get for the cap hit, and you can go out and get probably the best UFA defenseman on the market from the same team, and you don't have to go and have two separate negotiations and what would normally be maybe a first-round pick for each of these guys, you can just go and get both of them and pay the high price to get both of them right off the bat. So, I think it would be interesting. The Ducks might get more themselves by just moving them separately, but you could really appeal to a team, I guess, to maybe move, say, an Anton Lundell or something like that. I know he's close to untouchable at this point with the way he's played this year, but maybe that's how you tip the scales on a really high-end prospect, right? Is to say, okay, we can get both of your needs done with this one deal.
So, all right, well, wait a minute. Let's go to their little cat-friendly page here. Let's find the garbage contract.
I know, so Lundell's deal rumors came up in the Chychrun stuff, and now it's said he's untouchable since, but could be what tips the scales, right?
Let me dead up. Would you do Lundell and Hornquist for Lindholm and Rakell? Straight up nothing else.
Yeah, I think so, because if we're talking about getting the best possible return right now, you know, is a first, a third, and Schneider better than Anton Lundell? Probably not, right? Like, because Anton Lundell is a Calder Trophy candidate this year. He's one of the top prospects in the entire NHL. To go out and bring in a guy like that, that's what you're looking for, right? It's great to have all these other pieces. A first can turn into a good prospect. A third can turn into a pretty good prospect. And you get Braden Schneider. But those picks are hit or miss. You know what you're getting with Anton Lundell, right? And you immediately can interject that into your lineup. So, I would take that 10 times out of 10 to bring in a player like that. Whatever the best player you can get, I'll take that. The Ducks have a ton of small pieces, you know, good young prospects on the way to fill up the lineup. We've said this multiple times that the next things they need are some more star pieces to add to Zegras and Drysdale and McTavish.
All right, we're just going to go down this for another 5 minutes real quick. We're going to just give ourselves this little fantasy to live in. Do you move Zegras to the wing if you have McTavish and Lindell?
I think ultimately you move McTavish to the wing because he's played on the wing before. I think you get the freedom to choose at that point, right? Is you could try. They've tried Zegras at the wing this year after playing him at center, and now he's back at center. And I think when McTavish comes back up, he's only played on the wing in Anaheim when he's been up. So I think they give him the chance at center, see how he does. But it gives you some flexibility to try it out. I think either of them could eventually move to the wing, and it would work well. And it could be a situation where you just rotate them in and out and you try guys at different spots until you find a fit, right? Like, it's not a bad problem to have.
Just play all three of them together. Screw it.
McTavish on the left, Zegras on the right. Lindell on the middle. Right. I like that.
Well, let's do it. Let's just walk that back anyways. But I just never lived in that world for 5 seconds.
I would love that. Now, I think Lindell is getting fairly close to untouchable for the Panthers, but we've talked about it with these teams. The teams like the Panthers and the Wild and the Rangers who are closing in on cap hell with a lot of contract extensions that kick in next year. I think in the Panthers' case, it's Barkov and then a Huberto extension that have to come into place. And with the Rangers, it's Zibanejad and... Adam Fox,
Adam Fox.
They kick in. And the Wild, they have a few.
But Adam Fox jumps from an ELC.
This is win now for teams like that. And, you know, yes, it's great to have a young player like Anton Lindell under that ELC cap hit for, you know, the next couple of years. But is it almost more valuable just to bring in two impactful pieces for a cup run this year when you are a favorite to win the cup? You have to weigh those odds if you're the competitive team there, and what is more beneficial. Can you win the cup with adding Raquel and Lindholm to that team and potentially another depth piece somewhere else, that and it's going to cost you Anton Lindell? I think at that point, if you feel like you have a good enough shot to do it, which I think the Panthers do, it's what it's going to cost you to win. And if you win the cup, then you're not worried about it.
Here's my question. Does that deal make more sense for the Rangers than Florida?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes a little bit more sense for the Rangers. I don't think significantly more, but I think their win now threshold is a little bit higher than the Panthers. You have a little bit older players. I don't think they're as well built out, and the contracts they have coming up and guys they might lose. And then, like you said, the ELC jump to 9.5 for Adam Fox, like that cap space they have evaporates fairly quickly. And they've got all those young pieces that they can move now, right? So I definitely think, it's a bit more urgent on the Rangers side to go out and get something done.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the ones, right? It's Carolina, like I was looking right now, and Nino Niederreiter, his contract's up at the end of this year. And he makes 5.25, so it's like, you know, like he's third on the team in goals, but like ninth in points. He's only got like 14 goals and 10 assists, and like, I just think, Carolina, Minnesota, like we've talked about, are the teams that are definitely in that area where they have as much of an incentive as anybody to push. Maybe Minnesota at the most, because if it's lean the next few years and it's hard and you've got Erickson Ek and you've got Boldy and you've got Kaprizov and you can't do anything with them because you're paying $14 million in dead cap space, like, that's crazy to me. Like, I just think that's almost, like, unsurvivable. Yeah,
you get in a tough spot.
And, you know what I mean?
I mean, teams are looking at Edmonton and Toronto as almost examples of what not to do with contracts and superstars and cap space right now, and how it's proven how tough it is for those teams to kind of navigate that space, right?
Yeah, and if that's the thing, though, right? At least, like, with them, you can, like, look at the tangible impact, right, which is these stars. If it's Minnesota, it's we tried to get rid of these two guys, and it cost us $14 million a year for 3 years in what will be, you know, statistically Kaprizov's most productive years. It'll be, you know, the beginning of Boldy and the best of Erickson X years, right? Like, you know, that defense is fantastic, but it's not young. I don't know. This is, again, we've turned back into a Minnesota Wild podcast, but I just, thinking about trying to find those pressure points, it does feel like Minnesota is in a very unique position to kind of be put against it because of how they're built and how they're going to lose that cap space, right? It's a little different if it's, yeah, well, this guy who just won us the Norris, we're paying him now because he's that good, you know? Or, you know, I mean, if we're lucky, Huberto will win the Hart this year.
I keep looking at, and I want to keep drilling down on this Lindell Florida situation, because Dalton asked a question in the chat. He said, what's the most you would give up for Lindell? And you look at, well, that's not going to happen. They got Bobrovsky. But I know, yeah.
No, I'm telling you right now, I would take back Bobrovsky to get Lindell.
That's, I'm thinking, so Lindholm and Raquel are going. Hornquist is coming back. There's a benefit there for to shed some cap space for the Panthers so they can, you know, be a bit more comfortable in signing Huberto. You would assume they would want to look at locking up Lindholm, so you do free up a little bit of cap space in that sense for them there. Raquel seems to be a rental, but again, jumps right up into their top six. He would take Owen Tippett's spot with Sam Bennett and Jonathan Huberto, which would be really nice for them. It allows them to slide Tippett down in the lineup. If you have to add Comtois to that, do you do it? Is Lindholm, Raquel as rentals, and Comtois for Lindell and Hornquist? So you're taking on salary as well. We'll just say nothing else for sake of argument. I'm sure there would be picks and stuff in there, but
if I, oh man, I think when it came down to it, I might be willing to put Comtois in there because I think the opportunity to have three high impact centers potentially on one team all on the same timeline is kind of incredible, right? I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Everybody talks about how much McKinnon is underpaid and how McKinnon being so underpaid has allowed, you know, Colorado to maximize that opportunity cost and keep high impact players in the middle of their primes, right? They're keeping Rantanen, they're keeping Landeskog. They're going to keep Makar and Gerard and these kinds of players. And to me, like, that only happens because McKinnon wasn't straight perfect right out of the jump, right? It took him a couple years to figure out. And it reminds me a lot of Stephen Curry and the contract that he took that allowed them to build the Super Warriors, because he had ankle injuries and they weren't 100% sure if he was going to have injury issues over the duration of his career. And the reason I'm thinking about this all is because, you know, if you bring in a player like Lindell, then you put yourself in a position where you're Toronto, because there's nobody in your lineup that you're going to be able to squeeze to keep their cap hit down in a way that's going to give you meaningfully more cap hit or cap space in other places.
Yeah, I mean, so, in a good scenario where they all pan out, you're paying Zegras, McTavish, Lindell, Drysdale probably $7 to $8 million each, right? 30, like at least.
Oh, if they all pan out, I think you're paying probably $40 million close in total for all four of them?
I would say between 35 and 40 is what you would expect it to be around.
Because, I mean, if it, like, Jamie Drysdale panning out, like,
yeah, I'm saying all these guys hit their ceiling, right?
Or so, if they all hit their ceiling, that might be $50 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Ducks get lucky here that they all might be first line guys. Down to Zegras to like an 8x8.5, similar to what Jack Hughes did.
I want it to be 8.00001, just $1 more every year than Jack Hughes, just because it's funny.
I think, yeah, honestly, at the end of the day, Lindell could be untouchable, but I think it all depends on how desperate they are to win.
He is a right? quality.
How desperate are the Panthers are to win this year. And the Ducks are one of the teams that have the ability to take on the cap hit, provide some good young players and some players that can kind of fit the time frame and the cap range that a team like Florida could be fairly interested in. So it's just a a fun kind of exercise to look at and what it would take to get a guy like that. My last question before we move on from the Lindell stuff is, would you rather, you know, move these three guys out, presumably, for just Lindell, or would you rather take their individual returns? So if we're saying, you know, for sake of getting too far into it here, you know, Raquel and Lindholm both fetch you a first-round pick, you get a player, you know, prospect like Braden Schneider or something like that, who's not the same caliber as Lindell, but still a really good prospect. So let's say you get two firsts, a kind of prospect of that level, and, you know, a B-level prospect and another pick in separate deals for Rickard, Raquel, and Hampus Lindholm, you still keep Comtois. What return do you like better, that or just Lindell?
I think I would take, in this case, because of where this team is,
You're putting all your eggs in one basket if you're taking Anton Lindell, right? And it, which is maybe not the worst. Like, it's not a bad thing. Right. He's a really great player.
Yeah, it's not a bad basket to pick. But yeah, I think, you know, talking about some of the players in this pipeline, right? And you, like, if Pastyov hits, that's a high impact winger. If Perreault hits, that's a potential Rocket Richard candidate.
Yeah, Zellweger
level player, right? So like. I think it's worth having the quantity and diversity of assets by shipping them off all individually and being able to build internally, right? And continue to supplement your team with your own guys instead of having to go out and looking for those guys like the Rangers did with Barkley Goodrow or Calgary did with Blake Coleman. Instead of overpaying for those guys, you're kind of bringing those guys up organically through your system.
It's a tough call. I mean, both are great. It's not a bad situation to be in if you had to pick between the two, right? So,
yeah, and it, you know, you could the reason I'm saying I was almost talking myself out of saying the group is because it's like, well, you actually do have all these good prospects that could kind of likely be middling players, right? Like Colangelo, probably a third liner. Brain Tracy at best a second liner, right? So like you can see how the limits on these guys actually give you the things that you're hoping to get with the other, and then you bring in a guy who looks like he could be a legitimate number two center in this league for a long time. And if that's the case, like how do you walk away from that, you know, to have the opportunity to kind of have that and McTavish and Zegras in the same lineup? Like it would be very hard to walk away from that.
Yeah. And what it comes down to for me is why I lean towards Lindell is that these are late firsts. They're likely, you know, below the 20th pick. Yes, the Ducks have a great history there, but if we're saying, you know, you pull a Tracy, a Perreault, and then you get, you know, tight player and Schneider, and then, you know, whoever you get in the third, and maybe you hit, maybe you don't on it, you get three types of players you already have, unless you really, really hit. And it's been tough for teams to find those players late in the first that become superstars. You're passing up a guy who could be a legitimate star in this league to bring in, you know, more of kind of what you already have, right? Coming up in the pipeline, the Ducks have enough prospects to fill out the middle six of their roster, and it's about finding those key pieces to add to Zegras and McTavish and Drysdale right now. And you know, maybe Zellweger seems like he could be that guy, and the Ducks found a diamond in the rough in the second round. But you're getting almost, you know, as close to a sure thing by bringing in a player like Lindell versus, you know, some hopes and prayers with those first round picks, right?
Who is the big right handed kid that Toronto took in draft?
I think.
No, the most recent one. He went after Braden Schneider.
Man, I'd have to.
Or maybe I'm thinking of Braden Schneider, and he was projected to go to Toronto because he's a guy that they need. Because
I don't. I think the Leafs drafted the last Leafs top pick. I remember.
Did Schneider play for the Wheat Kings?
Yeah. Okay. The Leafs had no first round pick last year.
Okay.
2, 5, and a 6. Yeah. Their last first round pick was
for Kapan,
Rodion Amirov in 2020.
So. God, Love to get my hands on that fucking guy.
Schneider was 2020 draft, right?
Yeah, I believe Schneider
went 19th to the Rangers. Dawson Mercer went just before that. So Toronto could have drafted, but they drafted Brody and Amirov. So, and Anton Lindell went 12th overall in that draft. So,
yeah. Insane. He fell past Askarov, right? Yep. He went to pick after Askarov.
Freddie, Rossi, Quinn, Holtz, Skyfield, Sanderson, Raymond, Stützle, Byfield, Lafreniere.
Like, I get Rossi. It is very hard for me to think Askarov over Lundell is a good choice, especially with Cole Perfetti went after that, right? He'd get like 13, 14 to Winnipeg.
If you're Nashville, you already had UC Saros, who's panning out to be a pretty good successor to Pekka.
Yeah, like I just, that's a, and it's all hindsight. We have the benefit of knowing some of this. I just think, even some of the stuff going into the draft that you were hearing about Anton Lundell and his skill set, it would be really hard to pass that up for a goalie, even with the understanding that Askarov could be generational. Tough.
I mean, we'll know in a few years and then how that pans out. Hopefully we're judging Lindell's success in a Ducks jersey, not a Panthers jersey, but we'll see how this deadline pans out. I know our trade deadline discussions always start to teeter into the fantasy realm with some of these deals, but it's an exciting time. The Ducks have some players that they're likely going to move, and they're going to get some good assets for it. Before we move on from the trade deadline stuff, we didn't really talk about Manson too much. There was a lot of focus on Raquel and Lindholm, so I wanted to spend a couple minutes on Manson because his situation is a bit different than them, and the Ducks don't have as much flexibility to move him wherever they want because he has that no trade list that he has submitted. Do you remember how many teams that is? 12, okay. And rumor that teams like most of the, if not all, Canadian teams aren't on it with the issues surrounding COVID-19 restrictions and stuff, which apparently, at least here in Ontario, is going to be completely abandoned starting March 1st. So maybe that changes things for him. I don't know if it's the COVID restrictions that are causing it. I'm sure that's part of the reason. And maybe it is he just doesn't want to move that far away from his family that he has established in Southern California. So who knows? But I know obviously a lot of people's ears ticked up when they heard Dave Manson was becoming an assistant coach with the Oilers, and that could potentially be a destination because the Oilers are in desperate need of a good right-handed defenseman to fill a hole on their right side. So apparently Edmonton is on the no trade list for Josh Manson. I don't know if it stays like that forever, but he's the hardest one, right, to ship out because of that, because the list of suitors is almost cut in half.
I think that's fair, but I do think even with the no trade protection, I do think he's a little closer to Raquel than Lindholm in that regard, because like I think you can look at Raquel and be like, all right, he slots into our second line. Like, he's our second line right wing, and that allows us to move this guy down a line to go back with this guy, yada, yada, yada. Same thing with Manson. He comes in, he steps into the second pair. He's the second pair right-handed defenseman. We know that that's going to be, a bit more of a shutdown pair, and we're going to go from there. Like, there is just an ease and a certainty to bringing that type of player in that, even with, like I said, even with the 12-team no trade list, I still think he'll be movable. And I think it would be a little bit closer to certain to me than not, unless there's a contract extension.
Yeah. The good thing is, I mean, we'll see it before the deadline if it's an extension. He's either going to get moved or sign an extension. There's no in-between here. Like, he's not going to sign an extension in the offseason or after the deadline. He's either going to sign an extension before the deadline. And I think if we head into deadline day and he hasn't signed it, he's getting moved. Like, it is a extension that's going to get signed probably a couple weeks in advance of the deadline. And it might be one of the first ones they tackle because of that, right? Like, okay, what teams are interested? What teams are not on your, like, what teams are on your no-trade list? Okay, we're going to go to the ones that aren't. What are you going to get for them? What's the best we can get for them? And weigh it up with, the cost of extending them. Ultimately, I think they should trade them along with Raquel and Lindholm, but I like to burn things down. So
That's kind of been my thought though the entire time. The guy was only really willing to resign was Lindholm, but that looks like that ship has sailed now. But he is now the most likely to resign if they do. And ultimately, if they do resign him, I can understand why from a positional standpoint. Like, it's a lot to just be like, okay, Draisaitl, you're really our only right-handed defenseman at this point in time if he moves out the door. But yeah, his will be an interesting situation to follow because of that. There's a lot of teams that are going to be interested in him. It just depends if the teams that are the most interested and willing to pay the most are one of the teams that he's willing to go to.
Or if he can be convinced to waive no trade protection for one of those teams.
Yeah, because he still would have the freedom as a free agent to decide where he wants to go. Whether that's back to Anaheim or to a team closer. I don't know if that's I would imagine that his family comes into it, but maybe it's to LA or maybe it's to, I was going to say Arizona, but probably not, or Vegas or something like that. Who knows? A team that's closer that could still use him, and he takes a bit of a team-friendly deal to stick around and play closer to home. That could be a possibility. Like, to him, the selling point is, like, listen, you're only leaving for four or five months in a playoff run, depending on how long that goes. Then you get to pick wherever you want to go. I think that's the selling point for him to potentially waive that no-trade clause. Is, listen, you're not going for 5 years. You get to make the decision on where you want to go when you hit free agency, but will you go here? This is the best return we can get. Can you help out the team one last time? Maybe he waives it. I don't know. But we're...
Yeah. So, all right, let's put a bow on this with this. Not the same team for any of them. And you have to think about the best case for them for this year. Where would you love to see those three guys go?
I think Lindholm to Florida. It's really close between Florida and the Rangers, but I think Uyghur and Lindholm down the left with Ekblad and Gudas on the right. I think that's amazing. I think that's a great opportunity for Lindholm to step in there and potentially it's Uyghur Ekblad for Lindholm to play with Gudas. I think that gives him a bit more freedom to play the way he wants to play, and he's a little bit protected then. He's not the main guy. I think that's the perfect situation for him to walk into out of all the teams. Again, I think New York provides almost the same thing, but I would imagine he jumps into the top pair left side, right, for the Rangers, potentially with Fox, and then just great opportunity, but you are the main guy again. So it all depends on how much he wants to be the main guy. I think the fit for him as a number two lefty in Florida is perfect.
Yeah, I think with Lindholm, I think for me it's Boston.
Not bad, yeah. Playing with McAvoy.
Because I don't think anybody would score on them if it was him and McAvoy in the playoffs. I just don't believe it. Like, imagine, like, you're down by one in the playoffs and you have to get a goal, and then you, like, look up and it's like, oh, Lindholm and McAvoy and Bergeron and Pasternak and Marchand. We're fucked. Like, you know what I mean? So I think that's the one for me. I think for Raquel, mine would be St. Louis, because I just think he would step in and really provide that extra punch offensively for them. What about you for Raquel?
For me, on where I would place him, because there's a lot of teams that could use forward depth. I think he could jump in and do a job there. I just honestly struggle to find like a perfect fit for him on where he could play, and Dalton mentioned a good one where I think he would be able to jump up into the lineup and maybe bounce some of the guys out in Tampa. Again, he's probably the only guy Tampa can go out and afford and get. The rumors are Tampa's probably not going to do much, but if they're going to target somebody, I think it would be somebody like Raquel, who they can get for almost nothing and bring in, and he probably jumps into their top six and could play with a guy like Point or Stamkos, and that would be huge for him. So if they could somehow make it work, then I could imagine Tampa is a good destination for him. Not even sure what the Ducks would get in return. Tampa's decimated their prospect pool over the last couple of years for obvious reasons.
Fine, we'll take Sergachev.
Yeah, that would be nice. But I think if as a personal fit for the player, like, why would you not want to go to the back-to-back Stanley Cup champs and potentially play in their top six, right? Like, I think that'd be a great spot for him.
Terry Moon, Raquel.
Raquel goes back to center.
Yeah, exactly. What about
Boston was a thought. I know way back before they were out, before they started the way they did, we liked his fit in Philly as a potential spot. I think it's between Toronto and Carolina. Carolina, if they miss out on Klingberg, I think is a great landing spot for him to go there and not have to play as much under as much pressure. But then Toronto, there's just such an obvious need for a player like him on the right side of defense to slot in. So I think either of those teams would be good fits for him. But Toronto seems to not be on his list right now.
Yeah, I think Toronto makes the most sense from a go somewhere and be appreciated perspective. Just because I think, you know, the way he plays and him being on a new team and like kind of being reinvigorated by being on this contender with this high end firepower, like I think we would get the best version of Manson back. And it would be very hard for me to not want to see him do really well there. Like, if he went to Toronto and won a cup, I might get a Toronto Manson jersey. Like, it's that ridiculous for me. But yeah. So, anyways, we can move on to whatever. I just thought that would be.
Yeah, I mean that whatever. That pretty anyways. Much covers it. I was gonna talk the Zegras move at the All-Star Skills Comp, but I feel like we've covered that, and that's almost 2 weeks old now, which is crazy. That it's that far in the past. So we'll skip that one. We talked a bit about the Calgary and Edmonton game, trying to leave those in the dust because of how bad those two performances are. So the only other thing I was going to get into, but I think we'll save this because we are planning a prospect update episode, is we're going to look at Scott Wheeler's Ducks top prospects. He released the Ducks are number 5. And his prospect pool ranking. So I was going to look at that, but...
And that's without Zegras and Drysdale, right?
Guys like Zellweger and Colangelo have taken huge steps forward this year. It's just jumped the list, and then obviously Pastewov and McTavish on that list as well, as among others. So, yeah, it's impressive,
Dostal, to say the least.
Yeah, Dostal's had a really nice run lately for San Diego. Perreault's unfortunately cooled right off just after...
Yeah. He's a goal scorer. It's going to happen.
But yeah, Zellweger leading all WHL defensemen in scoring and have played like 8 less games than all of them. It's
yeah, wild. Dude. It's insane. It's like 11 less games and he's got like 2 more points.
He's got like 48 points in I think like 37 games or something right now, which is just wild. I checked it the other day. I kind of want to pull up this tweet now. I'm not sure how old it is, how buried it is, but it was a list of WHL defensemen in the last 25 years that Zellweger has a better points per game rate than, and it was pretty much like everybody, like every top defenseman to be drafted out of the WHL in the last couple of years, he was better than here it is. So to put just a casual list of NHL defensemen whose WHL single season point per game totals weren't better than Owen Zellweger's 1.371 that he has at this point in the season. Guys like Shea Theodore, Ivan Provorov, Bowen Byram, Josh Morrissey, Tyson Barrie, Tyler Sanheim, Kalen Addison, Jake Bean, Ryan Pulock, David Severson, Matt Dumba, Seth Jones, Morgan Riley, Jason Spurgeon, Shea Weber, and Ty Smith. Like those are all the top defensemen.
My God.
In the WHL over the last couple of years, and this is all their seasons too. Like this isn't just their sophomore season or the rookie season. Like any of their seasons in the WHL, so even third or fourth year for some of these guys, he is producing at a higher rate than all of them, which is wild. For again, he's still 17. I mean, he was 1 or 2 days away from being eligible for this year's draft. As like an older player, like that's how young he was in last year's draft. So he's basically doing this as a draft eligible player right now, and posting higher points per game totals some of these guys did in their draft plus one, draft plus two seasons. And we're talking like the top of the top offensive young defensemen to come out of the WHL, guys who are like
premier point producers in the NHL right now, and Seth Jones and Shea Theodore and among others, Bowen Byram, right? Like,
shut up! Don't pump Seth Jones' tires right now.
But it, like, listen, it. There was some worry and concern, and I don't want to, not really that much, but there was some, you know, debate on whether Zellweger was going to, you know, what he did last year in like his 13 points in 11 games was for real. He's proven that beyond a doubt this year. I mean, he's rocketing his way up the Ducks prospect list. Like, there's a debate for him at second behind McTavish right now, the way he's had. Like, it's just an unbelievable season. This type of progression you don't really see from a lot of prospects to begin with. Yet, like a young defenseman in junior to take these steps forward offensively, and then not at the detriment of his defense as well. Like, he's improved that as well. And then also being one of the best skaters to come out of that draft. Like, it's scary to see what this guy can do. And again, a testament to the Ducks scouting and drafting that they got this guy in the second round.
Yeah, no, it's exciting to have a young, dynamic defender like that in the system. I mean, you know, you remember how much I was gushing over just the concept of Jeremy Poirier, and like, it feels like this is, you know, what you were kind of hoping Poirier would be. And, you know, and his skating and his intelligence and his speed just allows for him to make up for being, I think, like 4.5 feet tall.
5 foot eight when he was drafted. You know, I think he's at, it was like a generous 5'8", or not so generous 5'8", because now he's listed at 5'10", which is manageable. Yeah, so hopefully by the time he, 5'8 off skates, but you probably eventually 5'11", close to maybe scraping the surface of 6 feet, because he's still only 17, so he's got a little bit more time here.
Yeah.
Which is
close
which
enough
is
to lie.
Average,
close
the average NHL defenseman nowadays.
Yeah.
So.
No, and it's, it's interesting. I just think it's very exciting, you know, because there are a lot of kind of steady two-way guys in the system. You know, Thrawn and Moore and some of those guys that just project to be good guys. And to have someone else that next to Drysdale who could be young and dynamic like that, I just think is really special. And it could be a huge bonus for Anaheim when they hit that next contending window that we all kind of hope they're going to hit sooner than later.
This is a guy who will probably go back to the WHL next season too, and it just, like, I can only imagine what he's going to do next year. Like, another year of experience and some more stuff.
You don't think he'll go to the A?
He can't. So it's either NHL or back to the WHL, because that rule only applies to Perreault and Drysdale and Tracy because they played time there during the lockdown. So, barring another COVID lockdown or anything like that, he's back in the WHL next year, which is wild. But he could push for a roster spot, if Lindholm and Manson are gone. There's open spots there, right? And it's not like Gouley and Larson are on top of the list to take spots, even Josh Maher at this point. So if he comes out and has a good camp, like, all of a sudden this guy could potentially be in the NHL at 18, depending on how well he does.
Jesus Christ, that is just—that's so insane to me. But man, it's nice to be here, when it, you know, just having,
like,
these
outside
guys
of the top picks to have these guys do so well that people are like, you know, so many guys that we have now in the pool, they're like, oh man, this guy could have been the steal of the draft. No, this guy could have been the steal of the draft. Like, to probably get what most people are saying there are the two steals of the draft, the early one in Pastujov, and now a little bit later one because of his production, and Olin Zellweger, like, these guys you got in the second and third round. And you look back at this maybe 5 years and say, the Ducks got McTavish, Zellweger, Pastujov in the first three rounds of the 2021 draft. Like, that's how you make or break a rebuild and success down the road, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the bit of luck you got to have, you know, and you know, luck is almost unfair, but it's one of those things where it's like, luck is the result of, like, hard work and commitment, kind of a thing. I don't know, there's a quote like that, but I always think about that, right? It's like, you know, you generate your luck by doing the hard work, and you know, the ability for that staff to go into that draft and pull out three guys that, you know, maybe, like you said, in 5 or 6 years they all look like first round draft picks. that's huge. Like, that's exactly like you said. I just feel like I'm just repeating you at this point. But yeah, you know, those are the stuff that allow you to be competitive. You know, how close those guys are together in age, and how well their primes overlap, and things
the only
like
other
that,
guy I wanted to mention was Sam Colangelo too, because I mean we'll get into all these guys eventually with the prospect update, but three assists in 8 games last year and an injury riddled COVID blocked season for Northeastern. He's got 8 goals, 20 points in 19 games this year. So he's, and when we got him too, like there was a lot of people who said that he could have been the steal of the draft for Anaheim in the early second round, a guy who was projected as a late first back when he was drafted playing for Chicago in the USHL. So a really good season for him. And a guy that was like likened to Jones, big physical guy. I think he's like 6'3", 210. Good scoring touch, so a nice depth piece that could hopefully round out. You think a potential, you know, third line with Jones and Colangelo on the wings. These are the type of guys that teams really want and pay a lot for, the Barkley Goodrow type guys. And you've got two in the system you could potentially bring right into the lineup down the road.
Well, here's the thing that's, I think, really interesting as you run away from me because you hate me. What I was going to say... what I was going to say about Colangelo is, like, if he hits 85-90% of his potential based on, you know, his build and the fact that he's got that heavy shot, like, he could kind of be, and this is just stylistically, a baby Ovi as far as, you know, a big physical forward who can then jump in on the flat and then just has that heavy shot and kind of produce on a second power play line. You know what I mean? Like, if he's in that... the one-timer spot on your second power play, that's not bad. That's, you know, that's good stuff, right? If your second power play is like him and Zellweger and McTavish and yeah. Carey, like, yeah, you're in a really good spot. So that's all. I just think Colangelo is someone that I'm very excited about as far as just to see if he kind of makes it, just because of his style of game.
Variety to the prospect pool as well. And it's one of the things I think the Ducks have done so well with, when you look at, you know, the Joneses, McTavish and Colangelos, and then the Pastuovs and the Zegerses and Perots, like just different types of players that will eventually fill out. Yeah. We'll fill out your roster. A lot of good young two-way guys like Tracy and Sean Chagrill on the way as well. And yeah, it's a nice mix. Right. And hopefully Anton Lindell gets added to that. And then whatever first round pick the Ducks get, that could be a top 10 pick this year as well. So it's a big year in the works. We'll wrap it up with this. Predictions for the upcoming games. We got 4.
No. All right. Here's what we're going to wrap with. I'm going to ask you this. Would you rather get 5th in this draft, or no, win this draft and get Anton Lindell, or get Connor Bedard next year? You're insane.
No.
You hate Lindell. Just, you heard it here.
There's some players that... Bedard is something else. You can't pass that up. That's like a top 5 potential player in the league when you look at him. So I'll take that any day of the week. I'll take him over Lindell and two first-round picks. Two top 2 picks in this year's draft, like that.
Vancouver, San Jose, LA,
at Vancouver on Saturday. Vancouver just rattled off a win, which is not good for the Ducks. I think loss against Vancouver, a win against San Jose. Is that the Rangers or the Islanders? Okay, loss against LA, unfortunately, and a win against the Islanders. So I'll go 2-2. Being optimistic.
I will say 1-2-1. I think they will beat Vancouver, and I think they will take the Islanders to overtime. But I think San Jose and LA.
If you lose these next 3 games, it's over. Like, it's already potentially over. Your fate is sealed. But we talked about you look at this team at the end of February, and if they lose all these big games, it's done. No matter what you do in March.
Well, yeah, because then you walk into Boston and Vegas, and then you have to play San Jose again. You got Florida, Nashville, Jersey, the Rangers,
couple late
Florida,
games
Nashville.
Dallas,
yeah, like
pushing for a wild card spot. So,
God. The wheels fell off that one fast, man. What is Bussett? It's been a fun ride
this year. This was to be expected at some point. But we'll be back. It's nice to be back for a post-game show. This is a little bit of a switch up. So this counted as our weekly show for this week because we've all got some busy weekends coming up. And I think we missed last week because we're recording a Patreon episode, which will be coming out soon as well. Steven just flipped over the file to me. So we'll be releasing that this weekend. And this one will be obviously out now and then out tomorrow morning for anybody listening to it after the fact. I think we're aiming to try and do another Patreon episode for this weekend. Just depends on availability. I know Jason wanted to do a show, but he's got hockey like every single day. So we're trying to figure that out and see if that can work. But some more Patreon episodes on the way coming up, and then we'll be back for this show either late during the week next week or back to our regular scheduled time on the weekend. So we'll fill you guys in on that one. We just looked at the games and I forgot what we had, but I think there's one game on Sunday. The Islanders game is on Sunday.
Friday, so Sunday. Maybe that'll be Friday, Sunday.
We'll aim for a Saturday one for that one and cover these last three games. So appreciate anybody who stuck out live for this one. Anybody listening after the fact, happy to be back. Glad that we can get back on the weekly show here, and we'll catch you guys all in about a week.
Bye, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.